What Detroit's bankruptcy means for every city and town with debt in America.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune in to Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Detroit today is officially bankrupt. Its emergency manager, Kevin Orr, could not persuade enough stakeholders to restructure the city's nearly $20 billion in debt.
Each restructuring I've been in, many of them, most of them, as a matter of fact, successful, I've heard the same thing. This is a crisis. The magnitude is huge. How can this ever happen? This is a testament to failure. Not at all. Bankruptcy, from my perspective, for those of us in this business, and restructuring, this is a tool.
Orr says the city's not closing and city services will continue. Kate Davidson now on what is next.
Now that Detroit's filed for Chapter 9, it gets
breathing room.
Paul Mako is a partner at law firm Bracewell Giuliani, specializing in municipal securities.
It gives them a chance to work out over an extended period of time problems that may be immediately confronting them.
He says municipal bankruptcies often pit bondholders, investors who buy a city's debt, against pensioners, retired public employees. Both were promised payments, and bondholders usually come out ahead. Still, bankruptcy expert Jim Spioto says filing for Chapter 9 could damage a city's credit rating in the bond market.
What is the future impact on the municipality and its ability to borrow? Any municipality of size needs on a regular basis access to the municipal market at a low cost.
There's also been a lot of talk about whether Detroit will have to sell off assets like an airport, its largest park, or a prized art collection. Maybe, but not because a judge so orders. Unlike in corporate bankruptcy, the municipality makes that call. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
On Fridays, we check in with Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. Morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So when Detroit files for this Chapter 9 protection, the creditors don't just go away.
No, absolutely not, David. They go right into court. And, you know, the thing is, it's also in the best interest of the city of Detroit to take care of them, because at some point they're going to want to borrow again, and they have to demonstrate that they treat bondholders okay.
Now, Detroit is an interesting case in the way that they've prepared for this bankruptcy?
Well, yeah, that's right. Look, corporate bankruptcy is pretty common. Municipal bankruptcy is not. It's very, very rare. And in this case, the treatment of GO bondholders has national ramifications. And that's because they've had a dedicated stream of revenue that has gone to pay debt service on that bond. The bondholders are going to claim, because of that, that they have a statutory lien. The way the judge rules on that is going to have implications for every municipal bond in the U.S.
And not a lot of precedent for that in Michigan.
No, in fact, no precedent for that in Michigan. And, you know, for that reason, too, we just don't know how it's going to go.
Chris Lowe, FTN Financial, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
The Chapter 9 filing means that the bankruptcy could jeopardize union contracts. People retired from government jobs are also watching to see what happens with pensions. And what's the view from one of Detroit's small businesses? Ben Hall is owner of the Russell Street Deli in Detroit's Eastern Market District. Morning, Mr. Hall.
Hi, how are you?
As you look through at all these budget cutbacks for the public sector in Detroit because of this financial mess, it's got to affect policing, for instance. Do you feel it near your business?
We feel it. I mean, we see it so much in the customers and how they react, and we've lost a lot of customers in the last 5 years.
You've really seen that. As the city has changed and people have left, do you think it's also affected the people who can come into your place?
We have a lot of customers who come in 3, 4, 5 days a week, and we've seen people leave and just never come back, and then maybe they show up 2 or 3 years later and they say, yeah, I had to move to Georgia, or I had to move to Illinois for a job.
Now, as the city struggles to maintain services, do you think that safety will be an issue near your business?
It has been in the past. our local business owners and our kind of district management has done a lot to make it safer, but I still had a customer in the last 6 months come out and have their car on blocks, which is a pretty scary sight for an executive to see.
He comes out after getting a sandwich and his car is up on blocks?
It was breakfast. Even worse.
So what was your reaction when you started seeing those headlines coming out that it's official, the city has filed for bankruptcy protection?
It's definitely a disease or cure scenario, and I'm not sure which one is which, but I'm hoping that this does things like turns the lights back on, because, you know, a lot of times we don't have street lights, that there's a more police presence, and that we, you know, can get the school system back in order, which is obviously our biggest problem that we have.
I'm hearing a sense in your voice, though, that you're still clinging to a kind of optimism. You think maybe you're at the bottom here?
Well, you know, we've been bailing water for a long time, and sooner or later, you know, you have to make some other kind of decision. And I think this decision is, you know, it's the next step in a long process. I mean, people have been making fun of Detroit since at least Kentucky Fried Movie. I hope that that would change.
Small business owner Ben Hall has the Russell Street Deli in Detroit's Eastern Market District. Mr. Hall, thank you.
Thank you, David.
A college football program that's seen an historic turnaround on the field is spending the summer brainstorming about how to do the same in the stands. Vanderbilt University was once the doormat of the Southeastern Conference. Well, not anymore, but what about attendance? WPLN's Blake Farmer reports from Nashville.
Who better to get ideas from than the competition? Visiting students on campus for a summer business boot camp hail from places that know how to pack a stadium, the universities of Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. Brianna McNeese from the University of Michigan says it's hard to believe there's an SEC team that's winning games and still can't fill 40,000 seats.
I mean, it's really shocking just to hear all this.
McNeese and the other business students are playing the role of consultants to build a culture of fandom at Vanderbilt, which has been sorely lacking.
Someone's even telling me that they, like, studied abroad during fall semester, which is not even an option for us, basically, because that's, like, what we live for, like football Saturdays.
Vanderbilt has been trying to manufacture traditions. The players now parade from the field house to the stadium. Third-year head coach James Franklin started flashing a VU with his thumb and first two fingers. The hand signal has caught on around campus, but Franklin remains exasperated. Students love to tailgate, he tells a crowd.
But then they don't come to the football game.
Coach Franklin has even met with fraternities and sororities to ask what he has to do to get them into the stands. Franklin says he wants to generate the same atmosphere his team faces on the road.
You got 80,000 people that hate you in the stadium, and we need that at home so that when people come play us, they have to deal with the same type of issues we do.
Selling more seats would also go a long way toward helping fund the football program, which Vanderbilt is throwing money at like never before, including a $30 million practice facility. It's a shift in priority for Vanderbilt, which has been known for its academics, not athletics. Isis Freeman is a senior.
Great Aunt Margaret, who got to pet the bulldog. Like, that's just not the kind of stories that people here at Vanderbilt have, so it's going to take some memorable moments to really get the student body, like, ingrained and behind the football team.
So far, just having the best record in nearly a century hasn't been enough. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
And the Australian Financial Review got an interview with former American CIA and NSA chief Michael Hayden, who said he's seen hard evidence that the Chinese telecom giant Huawei spied for the Chinese government. Now, Huawei is calling this unsubstantiated and defamatory. Hayden is now on the board of Motorola Solutions, arguably a Huawei competitor. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money.
Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.